my first convention, and I heard the person that spoke, the keynote. It changed my life. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Pam Allen, from formerly right from Buffalo, New York, now a member of the National Board of Directors of the National Federation of the Blind and director of the Louisiana Center for the Blind.
Thank you, Craig, and good evening, everybody. A crazy quilt is a unique conglomeration of randomly pieced fancy fabrics with embroidered embellishments on nearly every seam and patch. But it did not start out this way. The evolution of the crazy quilt as we recognize it today is a journey that illustrates the triumph of women's imaginativeness and ingenuity in the face of unimaginable trials and tribulations. The random piece of piecing odd bits of cloth together was a money-saving habit from colonial times. In the harsh and unfamiliar environment of the New World, the biggest factors needed to build a strong and enduring society required that the early settlers be hardworking with a strong sense of responsibility, first to family and then to community. In the beginning, when the coverlets and blankets the colonists had brought with them began to wear out, they were patched until the cloth could no longer hold thread. By necessity, self-sufficient, and by temperament, eminently practical, when clothing and bedclothes wore out, they were recycled. Worn parts were cut away, and any useful pieces were recombined. From these piece odds and ends, we can readily envision how the crazy quilt came into being. It was indeed crazy as far as design was concerned. There was no planned design in shape, arrangement of color, or use of materials. However, the finished product united diverse types and colors of materials into one useful and beautiful piece of work. It can only be surmised from what is known of the conditions prevailing at the time how these quilts made by the earliest colonial women must have looked. Not very pretty, because they were composed only of the stronger, though already worn pieces of material cut from otherwise unserviceable clothing and reinforced by newer materials when spots became worn. These quilts were made more as a result, born of accident and necessity rather than design. They were used for practical reasons, of course, but they also chronicled the stories of families passed down from generation to generation. Younger women learned techniques from their elders and experimented with them to form new ideas and patterns. Many times, quilt making was, and still is, a communal activity. Women would gather together for quilting bees where they could not only share pieces of fabric, but could also enjoy each other's company and give one another support. Although each of them may not have had enough fabric to create a quilt, by combining their resources, they learned about the importance of teamwork. Quilting bees provided early colonial women with a social outlet and a time for fellowship. These women realized that they were not alone. They understood the power of working together to form a beautiful masterpiece sewn with love and patience. As blind people, we can relate to the experiences of the early settlers of our country. We too face challenges and adversity. Many times our ideas are undervalued or unappreciated. Oftentimes, we may feel like we are the only ones. Although we may have dreams and hopes for the future, we may not reach our fullest potential because of lack of self-confidence, lack of opportunity, and low expectations. I became blind when I was about 2 years old as a result of retinoblastoma type of cancer. Although my parents were shocked by my loss of sight, they fortunately realized that I was still the same child, except that I could no longer see. Through their love and high expectations, they instilled in me a sense of pride and confidence about my ability to succeed. My parents expected me to perform household chores, do my best in school, and participate in family activities. Growing up as the youngest of six children also helped me to learn to be independent. Being the youngest, nobody, especially my brother, who was a year older than I, let me get away with anything. I attended the same preschool as the rest of my siblings, and when it was time to enroll in kindergarten, my parents wanted me to attend the same elementary school as well. Since the small Catholic school had never had a blind child enrolled, staff members were slightly uncertain. She'd be the only one, they said, and were not quite sure what to do. Since recently passed federal mandates gave my parents the right to educate me in the setting of their choice, they remained committed. Their persistence paid off, and soon I was enrolled. My mother is an avid reader who believes strongly in the importance of developing strong literacy skills. She read to us from infancy on and instilled in us a love of learning and reading. Consequently, my mother expected me to learn to read, just like my siblings. Even though I would be reading Braille instead of print, she knew that I could be as efficient as my sighted peers as long as I read every day. Fortunately, my itinerant teacher also provided me with the sound foundation in Braille, which helped me excel in academics. As I mentioned earlier, my parents expected me to do my best and engage in activities that would make me a well-rounded person. I participated in horseback riding, skiing, and cheerleading during elementary school. Another of my loves was performing in our school musicals. In eighth grade, I tried out for our production of The Wizard of Oz. I remember being very surprised and very excited because I made it to the second auditions. I was trying out for the part of Glinda the Good Witch. Even though I was very nervous on the day of the audition, I knew that I had done my best. When the cast list was posted, however, my name wasn't on the list. Instead of having the lead, I received a chorus part. I remember overhearing from some teachers that I would have gotten the part, except that the choreographer wasn't sure how I could handle the dancing and moving around on stage. At the time, although I had received some O&M instruction, I did not feel comfortable using or being seen with a cane, so I always depended on others to get me places. Since I was the only blind child the director knew, she couldn't imagine how I could perform the role of Glinda. Fortunately, my friends and family reassured me and said they knew that I could have done it, but I secretly wondered how. My parents had been actively involved in organizing and maintaining a group for blind children and their families when I was younger, and I attended summer programs in Buffalo for blind children. In fact, some of you are in this room tonight. You are very wonderful role models for me. Unfortunately, though, the combination of everyone's busy schedules and hectic lives caused the parents group to disband. And since at the time I didn't really have or necessarily want contact with other blind kids my age or competent blind adults, my questions about performing in musicals went unanswered. During high school, my interest shifted to performing in vocal ensemble and doing community service and having fun with my friends. Like other teenagers, I was eager to get a job. After all, I needed to support my ever-growing shopping habit. My mom and dad had stressed the importance of hard work and responsibility, and I was anxious to try my hand at a job. My family owned a grocery store, and I'd often helped around the store when I was younger. But I wasn't interested in working there. I wanted to earn a job based on my own abilities and talents. I remember searching through newspapers and making countless phone calls. As I mentioned before, while growing up, I'd had limited contact with other blind people my age. I'm not exactly sure why, but for some reason, I had no desire to associate with people who were blind. Even though I'm totally blind, I often referred to myself as having eye problems or not seeing very well. I'd always been taught that my blindness wasn't a barrier and that my attitude was critical for success. But when I was applying for jobs, the employers wouldn't give me a chance. It seemed that when the issue of my blindness arose, the jobs had miraculously been filled. Once again, I was the only one. Of course, my parents and I knew that I could probably figure out a way to do the jobs if I'd only get the chance. Finally, I landed a job selling subscriptions for our local newspaper. If any of you have ever done telemarketing, you know that is not easy, especially when your paycheck is based solely on the number of subscriptions you sell. Regardless, I was grateful that someone had given me a chance, and today I always try to be a little extra friendly when someone calls me on the phone trying to sell me something. I realize that every high school junior and senior experiences some trepidation about the transition to adulthood and independence. But as I began to draw closer to graduation, I began to have questions my sighted peers couldn't answer. I knew that I would attend college and eventually find a job, but I secretly wondered if I would truly able to obtain employment, quality employment. After all, I had so much difficulty trying to find part-time work during high school. I'd also never lived on my own, and I wondered how successful I would be. I wanted to get married and raise a family someday, but I really wondered how a blind person would be successful and competent as a parent. I knew I wanted to travel and attend a college away from home, but I didn't feel very comfortable or confident about using a cane or traveling independently. As I mentioned earlier, my O&M instruction had been sporadic while growing up, and I felt awkward and clumsy walking with a cane. It always seemed so much easier to go sighted guide and so much faster. I knew, though, that the colleges in which I was searching, I wouldn't know anyone else, so the test of my independence would soon arrive. Once again, my strong support network of friends and family definitely encouraged me, but they couldn't give me advice on how blind people traveled and lived independently. I was one of the only blind people that they knew. Growing up, I'd had little interaction or knowledge of the NFB, but I was encouraged by my family and teachers to advocate for my rights. I remember attending a summer program, actually, where I met Craig, and that summer, a bunch of us staged a sit-in during our time because we weren't happy with some of the policies of the training center that we felt were unfair to people who were blind. And I remember them telling us that we were the worst bunch of people they'd ever had. The most rebellious teenagers they'd ever had. So we knew we were on the right track. Although I must say, as I received services throughout my growing up, first when I was a child and then later on in high school and college from the New York State Commission, and had also great opportunities and services there. But again, I still had many questions. So I entered college with some apprehension, and I was determined I would achieve the best. My small liberal arts college provided me with an exciting environment for learning and growing. But those unanswered questions still nagged at me. If people were so amazed that I could accomplish the most insignificant task, would they really treat me as an equal? I realized that I had to meet other blind people who had more experience, who could serve as role models. I knew I needed to learn some tricks of the trade. My search exposed me to a wide variety of groups and organizations of and for the blind. Although I definitely benefited from the social interaction I found, I wasn't sure about the rest of the package. I wasn't interested in finding a group of people who wanted the world to change by making unnecessary accommodations, or who were bitter and felt sorry for themselves because they believed blindness was a tragedy. I was interested in finding a group of people who were confident and competent and who wanted to be treated as equals. It was not until I attended a student seminar hosted by the National Federation of the Blind of Ohio during the fall of my sophomore year of college that I began to find the answers for which I had been searching. Finally, I met young, motivated blind people. We swapped our stories. I couldn't believe how many experiences we shared. Although I didn't realize it at the time, the seminar marked the beginning of a new chapter of my life. At the seminar, I met Barbara Pierce, president of the NFB of Ohio, and she told me about the Louisiana Center for the Blind. At the time, I was searching for an internship opportunity. She spoke with Joanne Wilson, the director at the time of the center, and arranged for me to complete an internship during the following May. Barbara told me that spending time at the center would allow me to discover the heart of NFB philosophy. She said I would either love it or hate it. Throughout the year prior to my internship, she patiently listened while I asked questions and tried to understand the differences among the organizations of and for the blind. And boy, I had lots of questions for her. I also began reading the Braille Monitor, and I was amazed by the articles. I couldn't believe some of the stories I read about instances of discrimination. I was also motivated by the articles which discussed employment opportunities. I was finally beginning to learn about blindness from people who had firsthand experience. By the time May approached, I was eager to be immersed in the activities at the center. During my internship, I was challenged and empowered. I was forced to confront my own misconceptions about blindness, and I began to discover the power of collective action. My experiences were vastly different from my experiences during the summer programs about which I spoke earlier. Upon completion of the internship, I had the honor of working as a counselor in the children's summer program. I believed I learned more that summer than I taught. Little did I know that the opportunity would alter my life forever. I met so many role models to whom I could turn for advice, and I had a chance to share my experiences with blind children and their families. Prior to that summer, I'd never even considered the possibility of working with blind people. I didn't realize that not everyone had been exposed to high expectations and quality training in the skills of blindness. Of course, sometimes I felt like one of the early colonial women. I was in a new place, very far away from home, and very new to the philosophy of the NFB. But I realized that I had discovered a new support network. I was no longer the only one. I discovered another family who believed in me sometimes more than I believed in myself. I'm not sure why Joanne decided to take a chance on me, but I'm certainly grateful that she did. I returned to college that fall with a new sense of commitment to my blind brothers and sisters. Shortly after, I participated in an off-campus internship in Philadelphia. As part of the experience, students were required to research, locate, and interview for internships. We had all about 2 weeks to secure our positions. The program was well known and well supported in the Philadelphia area, so many private and governmental agencies offered spots. At that time in my life, I intended to pursue a career in clinical psychology or law. I decided to investigate internship opportunities with local advocacy and public interest agencies. I believed that my academic achievements and demonstration of leadership abilities would enable me to obtain an internship, which would challenge and enrich my life. I narrowed my search to about 5 agencies. One of my top choices was with an attorney who specialized in advocacy for women's and children's issues. The description sounded perfect. I expected the attorney to have an open mind and to be willing to listen as I answered any questions that she might have. However, I was shocked at her reaction. Not only was she unreceptive, she essentially refused to entertain the idea that I could possibly perform the job duties efficiently and independently. I knew that I could, but she was unwilling to consider the notion. I believe that each of us has defining moments in our lives which shape our future. For me, the experience with the attorney was such a moment. I could not believe that she had reacted so negatively and doubted my capabilities simply based on my blindness. I'd read about instances of discrimination in the Braille Monitor, but I'd always thought something like that would never happen to me. My experience seemed to bring home the point that although great strides had been made, many stereotypes and misconceptions still exist about blindness. Fortunately, at that time, I knew about the National Federation of the Blind. I knew where to turn for advice and support. Coincidentally, the Washington seminar happened to be about the same time I was interviewing for the internship. I heard about Washington seminar in Louisiana and through the monitor. Since I was so close, I decided to take the train from Philadelphia to D.C. The timing couldn't have been better. I connected with leaders in the student division with whom I could share my experience. I also met members of the local chapter in Philadelphia with whom I kept in touch upon my return. I was thoroughly amazed by what I saw and experienced in Washington. I returned to Philadelphia with more confidence and a renewed spirit. I landed a wonderful internship with a much more open-minded attorney, and I was nurtured by my Federation friends in Philadelphia. Later that semester, I visited the attorney who had denied me and presented her with Federation literature. I hoped that our meeting would force her to confront her negative ideas and see the truth about blindness. That summer, I attended my first national convention in New Orleans as a national scholarship winner, another life-changing event. I was inspired and motivated by what I experienced there. And like some of you here this weekend, I was a bit overwhelmed and unsure. Throughout the week, I met and talked with countless leaders who took the time to share their stories with me. Hearing Dr. Jernigan and Dr. Maurer speak for the first time was incredible. I couldn't believe that Dr. Maurer took time out of his schedule to speak personally with me and talk about my dreams and hopes. Just like colonial women pieced together their random bits of fabric to make a quilt, which told the story of their lives, I began to learn how to weave my story with the stories of the leaders who had come before me. I realized that their hard work and advocacy efforts had created the opportunities that I now had. I learned that a small group of committed people with limited resources had started the National Federation of the Blind. I met blind people from diverse backgrounds who were truly committed to changing what it means to be blind. Over the next few years, my work in the student division enabled me to strengthen my beliefs in our movement. Through the sharing of our stories, I began to understand the importance of working together for a common purpose. After graduation from college, I decided to become a student at the Louisiana Center for the Blind. Some of my friends and family wondered why I decided to enroll at the center. They said, "You already know Braille and you finished college," but I knew that I needed to be immersed in our philosophy to learn more about the history of our movement and strengthen my skills and my confidence. Shortly after my graduation from the center, I became employed full-time as the Director of Youth Services. During my tenure as Director of Youth Services, my life was enriched in so many ways. I met countless numbers of parents and teachers and blind children and teenagers who felt like they were the only ones. I saw firsthand the importance of holding high expectations in order to achieve success. I remember the first summer that I was the director meeting one of our buddy kids who went around the room and asked all the staff, "Are you blind? Are you blind? Are you blind?" And everybody was. And it got to me and said, "Are you blind?" I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "I didn't know directors could be blind." I witnessed how the Federation philosophy touched and changed lives forever. I'm proud to say that many of our summer program participants are now active leaders in the National Association of Blind Students and in their local NFB affiliates and chapters. As a result of my work in Ruston, I also met a talented and dynamic cane travel instructor with a passion for life and teaching. As many of you know, that wonderful person, Roland, later became my husband. Roland's love and support have made so many of my dreams come true. And as I mentioned earlier, involvement in the National Federation of the Blind has many benefits. Often in our often in our Federation family, we're called upon for a wide variety of duties. Sometimes we question whether or not we can truly rise to the occasion. You're probably familiar with the expression, life begins at 30. A few years ago, I experienced such a time in my life. At the end of 2000, I turned 30. Little did I know how my life would change. In 2001, Joanne Wilson was appointed as Commissioner of the Rehab Services Administration. I became the director of the center. It was quite a year since I also became president of the state affiliate, became engaged, planned a wedding, got married, bought a house. It was busy. I know, though, that it was my Federation family who helped me get through that crazy year. The following summer, I had the tremendous honor of being elected to the National Board of Directors. Now in my current position as president of the affiliate, director of the Louisiana Center for the Blind, and member of the National Board, I'm challenged to live and spread the philosophy of our movement each day. I'm blessed to see the evidence that our philosophy works And I was thinking about it today and thinking how interesting it was that so many of the people that I grew up with who not all of us necessarily knew about the NFB, but we sort of all ended up here little by little. Teaching blind people the skills of blindness, instilling in them self-confidence, and most importantly, giving them the gift of the National Federation of the Blind. I witness incredible transformations on a daily basis. When our students enter the program, many times they feel isolated and anxious about their prospects for the future. Their dreams have been shattered, but because of their commitment and hard work and the dedication of our staff, they leave changed forever with spirits strengthened and renewed. Each day as I watch our students grow and stretch themselves, my belief and commitment to the National Federation of the Blind is strengthened. It has also been my pleasure to assist in the development of our graduate programs in orientation and mobility and teaching blind students, not vision teachers, but teaching blind students, our teaching degree, at Louisiana Tech University. These programs are wonderful opportunities for training professionals in the field of blindness who have our philosophy about blindness. Being the director of the center is probably one of the hardest jobs I'll ever have. But because of the belief and support of my Federation family, I know I can be successful. I'm grateful for the opportunity it allows me to give back. Just as early colonial women came together at Quilting Bees for encouragement and support, we come together at our local, state, and national meetings and conventions. Just like the early quilts, the National Federation of the Blind is made up of a diverse group of people who bring their individual talents and strengths together to form a stronger unit. It takes only a small group of people who are willing to sacrifice their time and their energy, a sacrifice that will truly make a difference. Dr. Tenbrook, Dr. Jernigan, Dr. Maurer, and our national leaders have nurtured all of us and shared their wisdom and stories with younger generations. Because of the National Federation of the Blind, we have a whole new generation of blind people who have been empowered by the truth about blindness. Our combined stories have become blocks of a living quilt, stitched together with threads of love, loyalty, hope, sacrifice, and commitment, a tribute to our past and a legacy to which future generations will add their stories. And so, as we come together to share our stories, celebrate our accomplishments, and plan for the future by turning our dreams into action, we become stronger as we experience the power of the blind speaking with one voice. And we truly come to understand the words of Dr. Jernigan. In everything that matters, we are one. Thank you.
Yeah.